It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
You all right?
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. All of this could have been avoided if we followed my plan.
Broadcasting from Portland to Seattle and all of Oregon and Washington.
What was it you were saying about my voice?
It's loud, it's strong, and it's good, and I appreciate your support.
This is Honestly Provocative Talk with Lars Larson.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Now, here's Lars Larson.
Be sure and keep that volume up.
On FM News 101.
It's going to be one of the highest rated shows ever.
KXL.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and welcome to Monday. Glad to have you with me live on the Radio Northwest Network. There is a lot to talk about today. Fake news, and more fake news. And the President of the United States is pushing back on that. We'll talk about the new effort to try to make it easier to sue police officers in Washington State simply for doing their jobs. In fact, that is today's Twitter poll, which you can find on Twitter at Lars Larson Show and on my website at LarsLarson.com. Should Washington State voters make it easier to sue police officers just for doing their jobs? Now, in last week's Twitter poll, we asked you, should states be allowed to ban gasoline-powered automobiles? 93% of you joined me in voting no. Only 7% voted yes. And while you're voting in the Twitter poll, be sure to visit my trophy room at LarsLarson.com. Doesn't cost anything. Just post a picture and a paragraph about your latest hunting or fishing adventure and have the chance to win some great prizes. So, welcome to Monday. I got a couple of thoughts for you. CNN runs out a fake story last Friday morning on WikiLeaks and the President of the United States. They get caught because the mistake they made was so colossally stupid that you'd think that a high school journalist could have caught it. But they didn't. They didn't catch it until the Washington Post pointed out to them that they had made a huge error, that they had said that somehow the Trump administration, that Donald Trump himself, might have gotten early word about the documents from the DNC that had been released by WikiLeaks because they read an email that said September 14th as September 4th. They made a mistake of 10 days in reading a date. And finally, they got caught out because one of their competitors, but one of their fellow left-wing journalism organizations, the Washington Post, looked at the email and said, that doesn't say September 4th. It says September the 14th. Is CNN backing down? No. And Donald Trump was having none of it Friday night as he called them out for that fake news. And then, of course, there was the Washington Post that engaged in some fake news of its own, sending out a photograph of a nearly empty auditorium in Pensacola, Florida, where the president was going to speak. And they indicated that that was the crowd that the president had drawn because, as we all know, it would have been news if Donald J. Trump had failed to pull a full venue because he's been pulling full arenas since the summer of 2015 when he began his campaign for president of the United States. So it would have been news if he had failed to pull a full venue. But the Washington Post reporter had taken a picture that showed the inside of the auditorium at a time when the event was still hours away, and they were portraying it as being an honest portrayal of the kind of response that Donald Trump got. Instead, what he got was a full arena and thousands of people spilling outside who couldn't even find a seat on the inside of that venue. I also want to mention the passing of former Portland Mayor Vera Katz, who passed away. She died from cancer. She's been battling it for years. She had been born in Germany. She grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and then she came out to the left coast of America. She was Speaker of the Oregon House in the 70s and the 80s, and then became mayor of Portland. She didn't exactly distinguish herself in either job, but I do want to mention this. She did do one thing for which I am very, very grateful, and that is in the late 1980s, there had been a horrible shooting at a schoolyard in Stockton, California. And one of the predictable responses, even 30 years ago, was if there's a shooting incident, The Democrats believe you have to have more laws on guns, that somehow laws on guns will stop a lawless murderer who has just carried out a murder. Now, you know that the logic doesn't follow because criminals don't follow the law. That's what makes them criminals. By definition, people who are criminals don't follow the laws. But they wanted to pass a law in any case, and they did. The law really doesn't even have any effect anymore today because it was a law about extending the waiting period when you were buying a gun. Well, today we have the instant check system, which means that in most cases, you can buy a gun with a check that takes maybe an hour or so, sometimes less than that. But to make the bill palatable to those of us who are pro-Second Amendment, what Vera Katz did was she agreed to put concealed carry in that bill. That was in 1989. As a result, Oregon has one of the most liberal concealed carry laws in America. In fact, it's far more liberal than the concealed carry law in the state of Washington. And that law has created no problems. That law, I would argue, too, has actually saved a lot of lives. And Vera Katz and John Kitzhaber, too, were two of those behind it. So while the two of them did not exactly distinguish themselves in other areas in politics, they did do some tremendous things on behalf of those of us who believe in the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution. We'll get to all of your phone calls and emails because we serve the Northwest with honestly provocative talk radio. It's the best conversation in talk journalism right here. And if you want to join in, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense, presented by the Ryan Group, where they guarantee to sell your house in 29 days or less, or they'll buy it. 29andgone.com.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
You know, occasionally the police have to shoot somebody, and sometimes that ends a person's life. It's nearly always justified. When you present a threat to the police or bystanders, expect the officers to use force to stop that threat. That's what happened to Charlena Lyles of Seattle, who attacked two police officers with knives. She had mental illness problems, and she was shot and killed. A long investigation showed that the officers acted properly. But now the anti-cop crowd wants to change the law and make it easier to sue the police, even when police act within the law and within their department rules and training. It's called Initiative 940, and it appears to have the almost 300,000 signatures necessary to put it on the ballot. It's a slap in the face to officers who put their lives on the line to protect the rest of us. Making it easier to sue the police only makes the trial lawyers happy. It also makes talented young men and women avoid policing as a career. It also makes those already wearing the blue uniform hesitate in dangerous situations, and that is likely to send more innocent citizens and cops home in a box.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Arm Yourself Gun Store in Hillsboro. Proudly veteran owned and open 7 days a week. ArmYourselfStore.com.
Today's Daily Grill goes to those trying to make it easier to sue police officers when they are forced to use violence. Today's best email, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. Today's email brought to you by Papa's Shoehorns, the perfect Christmas gift. Check it out. I've done the same. On the web at papashoehorns.com. Butch Walter writes, "In Lars, I'm a conservative gun-toting man, 60 years. I agree with most of your views, but take exception to the one you've stated over the last few months, the Cole Project. My family and 1,000 or more neighbors living on our beautiful Family View properties in the hills east of Kelso and I-5 stand to lose greatly in both health and monetary concerns if that Cole dock is allowed. We live directly above the Longview Rail Yard, that was a choice, where there's already too much noise and diesel smoke. To add 16 more two-mile long trains to this area would be devastating to us all." Signed, Butch Walter. We'll talk about that as well. And we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. I don't want to be accused of being the source of fake news, but I had promised you that you would be able to hear from De-Escalade Washington. Now, I called Rial, I don't have his name in front of me anymore because somebody took it off the sheet. Rial is the guy who's behind this whole effort to put Initiative 940 on the board, but he just decided about 2 minutes ago that he doesn't want to do the interview, but he does want the interview to be done by Lynn Tye. But apparently, are we having problems with Lynn Tye as well? Oh, so listen, folks, when you get to thinking about voting on Initiative 940, just remember that the people behind it are not willing to stand up and answer a few questions about it. One of them apparently decides at the last second, I can't do it. Now, I called this guy this morning, the guy who's behind all this, and I called him and I introduced myself and I said, I do a Northwest talk show. It's on KVI. It's on KXL in Portland. It's on all over the region. And he said that he was going to be coming on today to talk about it. We scheduled a time. We scheduled the phone number. We scheduled everything. And then my producers call him literally 5 minutes ago. And he says, oh, no, I can't do it now. I'll have somebody else do it. A member of the campaign's leadership, Lynn Tye. And then Lynn Tye says, well, I don't want to do it either. So it sounds like these are people behind a ballot measure. Rial Johnson, the former NFL linebacker, he's the campaign manager for De-Escalade Washington. He's the guy who wants to pass the ballot measure that would make it easier to sue police officers who have done nothing more than their jobs, like the officers who had to confront Charlena Lyles. And Charlena Lyles died, and that is a sad thing. But the fact is, they did nothing wrong under the law. They did nothing wrong when it came to her, you know, their training or the Bureau's rules. And they were criticized roundly, and there were folks who wanted to sue them. These folks want to disarm the police and make it essentially impossible for a police officer to defend you or defend the community or defend themselves using lethal force when necessary. Let's go to Mike, who's a naysayer in Medford. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. Hey, Jordan, make sure Mike is turned on, please. Thank you very much. Oh, I see what we got. Yeah, we got a little problem there. All right. Let's go to John in Eugene. Hey, John, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Lars.
You bet. What's on your mind?
I'm calling about the initiative up in Washington to make it easier to sue the police. And I just retired as a police officer for a couple different departments in Oregon. And I've been sued a couple times for doing simply nothing more than my job.
Yep.
And I found it very stressful. It disrupted my life for several years. And these were over just silly allegations. They weren't even over a police shooting, which I've been involved in as well. And that in and of itself is very disruptive to not just me, but my entire family.
John, so, I think the people listening, if they've never actually been facing down either an arbitration or a lawsuit, they don't know what it's like. And those who have, like you, know what it's like that you wake up every morning thinking, this is the thing that could bring about the end of my career. This is the thing that could leave my family without an income. Am I wrong?
You're correct. And not just that, if you really look at what police officers do, I mean, for simply doing nothing more than their job, they can not just be sued, not just be killed, like my best friend, who was a police officer who got shot, doing simply nothing more than his job, but our liberties can be taken away for doing nothing more than trying to protect the citizens of our state, of our county, or our cities. So when you look at just the overall picture, to be sued for doing nothing more than your job is ridiculous, because there's processes in place already called, in my case, the Oregon Revised Statutes that tell you what you can and can't do under the authority of the law. So to go more than that and make it easier for citizens of Washington to sue the police just because they're mad at them is silly.
And do you know what the logic is that's being used to sell this, John? I go to a lot of both left and right wing sites. One of them is called Crosscut. They say the solution to Washington's problem of police involved shootings may be in this initiative. What they're saying is, if we make it hazardous enough for police officers to even use their guns, the police officers will stop using their guns. And I think they're right. They may get police officers to stop using their guns, but I think the logical outcome of that, not a good one, but the logical outcome of that is we'll have more dead police officers and we'll have more dead citizens because the police officers will no longer have a way to deal with a deadly threat when they confront it. And is that what people want so that we can have a few more criminals who don't get shot?
Exactly. I think just in the last few years, specifically looking at Ferguson and the outrage over that, and then the social groups that were founded based on some of the misinformation from that whole story, has made it more and more dangerous for police in and of itself, because police now are less likely to be as aggressive as they should. And
I'm with you, John. I think they should be aggressive. But let me go to a naysayer and see what happens. Naysayer Mike is on the line from Medford. Mike, thanks for listening on KMED. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't mean to take you off topic, but
go for it.
Said in your opening monologue that Oregon has very liberal concealed carry policies.
Yes.
I don't think they do. I think they have very liberal open carry policies, but it's my opinion that open carry is way more dangerous and concealed carry is way safer. So how are Oregon policies even constitutional or liberal with regards to concealed carry?
Well, I'll tell you how they're liberal. In many states where I have permits, I cannot carry a gun in a public school. I can in Oregon. In some states, I can't carry a gun concealed in a church. In Oregon, I can. In many states, you can't carry on a college campus. Virginia, the state of Virginia, or Commonwealth of Virginia, is a good example of that. And people have begged for the right to carry on college campuses. In Oregon, I can walk across a college campus and carry a gun. I've done live broadcasts from OSU while carrying a gun legally. And I can go into public buildings. In many states, you cannot. Those are four or five examples where Oregon's law is much more liberal than the laws around the rest of the United States. Now, you got about 10 seconds or I'll have to hold you over. What do you say?
Well, I say then as a moral equivalency, we have some liberal policies. But from a constitutional viewpoint,
I don't know what that means, though. I'll tell you what, I'm going to hold you through, and I'm going to get the explanation on the other side. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. I'm glad to get your phone calls and your emails, and I held Naysayer Mike through because I had started this hour, by mentioning that a politician, who I got along with reasonably well as a reporter, Vera Katz, who had been the Speaker of the House for quite a long time. She was also the mayor of Portland for a long time. And I didn't think much of some of the other things that she did, like bringing in streetcars and propping up light rail and things like that, spending a lot of money on a lot of feel-good projects like the East Side Esplanade. But one of the most significant things she did, and I'm willing to bet that the local Daily Dead Fish Wrapper probably won't mention it, is passing one of the best concealed carry laws in America. And she helped make that happen. Even though she was a liberal Democrat from New York, she made that happen. And I'm willing to bet that most of the reporters who cover her passing today are not going to make mention of that. So, Naysayer Mike called me up. And Mike, I didn't understand your objection. You said something about moral equivalence or moral authority? What was it?
Well, I'll try to back up the bus a little bit. So we've already established that you believe Oregon has a liberal policy toward concealed carry.
Liberal in a good way. Yeah. Not in a bad way. Yeah.
Relative. Yeah. Sometimes liberty is good. Relative to other states.
The only other, what else would you compare it to?
Well, I would compare it to the Constitution. So we already know that relative to the Constitution, in my opinion, any restriction on bearing arms is not liberal.
Well, I agree with you. The problem is the courts have not agreed with you. States have. Some states are 11 states that have constitutional carry, and the other 39 do not. But compared to the 39... Yes, 11 states have constitutional carry, like Vermont did years ago. There are 11 different states that allow a form of constitutional carry where you don't need a permit at all. There are 39 where you do, and in those 39, Oregon has one of the best. So I'm not sure we disagree about much.
Well, when you use the word liberal, I would believe that no restrictions on concealed carry would be considerably more libertarian.
You're talking about how many angels will dance on the head of a pin. I'm just saying that among all the laws to allow carry, concealed carry in various states around America, Oregon's is the most liberal. And I don't know of a single other one that is more liberal. Texas is not. Idaho is not. California is not. Washington is not.
There's no state that doesn't require a permit to conceal carry?
Yeah, there are 11, though. I just said there are 11 that do not require a permit. Are you listening to the same conversation I'm having?
Yeah, I'm trying to follow you.
Okay, there are 50 states in America and the District of Columbia. Of the 50 states, require a permit, 11 do not. The District of Columbia does allow a permit, but it's exceedingly hard to get.
Yeah.
Okay, Mike, it's the last time I have not been able... That's interesting, because that's the first naysayer in a long time I haven't been able to follow. Let's go to Bruce. Hey, Bruce, welcome to the Lawrence Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to get some naysayer on the initiative in Washington, but I understand Mike's issues with using the word liberal, because good concealed carry laws, although none of them are good, other than those 11 states that don't require it, are truly conservative. So I understand why he's having an issue, but I called because the police do need to be easier to sue. And
why?
Not because...
Holy cow.
Well,
okay.
There's this thing called qualified immunity. Now, I'm a 2014 graduate of Southern Oregon University with a minor in criminal justice.
Well, that tells us where your politics are coming from, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
I had a lot of fun at SOU as a conservative, challenging the status quo. But qualified immunity allows an officer to get away not with murder, but with a lot of things. He can do a lot of things to you, and you really have no recourse because he's got qualified immunity unless you prove otherwise.
Okay, now, but Bruce, the issue in Washington State is they have a different law than every other state in America. Their law says unless you can show that the officer engaged in malice, that he was saying, I'm going to shoot that guy because I don't like that guy. That unless you can prove that, if the officer followed the law and if the officer followed his training and his departmental directives, you have very little way to sue him. So the qualified immunity doesn't necessarily come into it. It's the fact that if the officer is doing his job and he does it within the law and within his training and within the rules of his department, why should it be easier to sue him?
But it goes much further than that. Seattle, and I do not know what the initiative says, but in the city of Seattle, Officer Burke shot a deaf in one ear American Indian. He was simply walking across the sidewalk in front of him with a pocket knife whittling on a board, jumped out of the car, dropped the knife, and opened fire. The man got nothing other than he resigned.
Well, the end of your career would be, I would say the end of your career isn't nothing, is it?
Well, it's nothing compared to the man who lost his life.
Well,
and the city cost him $1.5 million, I believe it was, and they've got a street named after the victim. But
well, that certainly says a lot. But tell me this, if the officer was acting within the law, and he was not, I just checked, he was not charged, we've talked about the case before, but it's been a while because it goes back almost 7 years. He shot the man, but was not charged with a crime. In that case, what would you want to have happened to that police officer?
He should have been charged with, at the bare minimum, manslaughter. because he was not within his rights. He was not within the law.
Except that's your opinion, whereas the King County Prosecutor's Office looked at all the video, they looked at the law, they looked at the officer's actions, and they decided not to charge him. So
that's
and,
true.
And this and initiative would not change this. It would just mean that he could be sued civilly.
Right, and that's what we need, because until their homes and their pocketbooks are in
so, jeopardy. Bruce, tell me this. I just want to understand your position precisely.
Okay.
You want a police officer who did not break the law, in other words, he didn't commit a crime by shooting somebody, and he didn't violate his department's rules, you still want him to be sued civilly so that his family's home, car, belongings, their life savings will be gone, even though he didn't break the law criminally and he didn't violate his department training. You want him to be sued into bankruptcy, basically, and so he's penniless, right?
So, no. It's
what do you want?
Issue. Here's the problem. Officer Burke, and Officer Burke's just one example, but he is straight out of Washington. He violated the man's rights and the system, which is corrupt. As a criminal justice minor, I have studied
If you think it's corrupt, then why do you think you'll get satisfaction by making it easier to sue within a corrupt system? That's kind of a logical contradiction, isn't it?
Because until the people can take them to court and sustain a case against them, the system that's currently protects them too much. Now,
well, by the way, Bruce, can you tell me, what do you do for a living? Do you mind saying?
I'm a retired Marine. I am a former deputized member of non-law enforcement of the Sheriff's Department down in California.
Yeah.
My father was a retired California Highway Patrolman.
But you wanted to be the case that if a deputy or a police officer is out doing his or her job and pulls a gun out and feels it's necessary to shoot because of a threat that's presented by a suspect, that even if they don't break the criminal laws of that state, and even if they followed all of their department training and procedures, you want them to be sued so that their life is tied up in court for the next 5 years, and perhaps they lose everything they have. Do you know that the outcome of that is likely to be whole police forces where nobody will pull a gun?
So here's the issue.
No, answer my question first, and then go on to whatever your issue is.
So, yes, that would be preferable.
Okay, so you want police departments where nobody will pull a gun, and the bad guys will figure that out about 5 minutes after it becomes the case. So if you have a bunch of bad guys who will do violence, who do violence to members of the general public like you and me, that you want the police force to respond, and all the bad guys will know this cop will not pull a gun because he knows if he does, everything he's got goes down the tubes. His career and everything he owns will go down the tubes. He won't pull a gun. I can do almost anything I want to as a bad guy because he won't pull a gun. That's what you want?
I simply want them more restrained. And here's
much more restrained? When somebody is pointing a gun at somebody, if there's a police officer there, do you want the officer to shoot that man if he believes that man is about to hurt somebody?
Yes, that's a cut and dry situation.
The problem is, not always, we have,
first of all, we have no record keeping requirements on any jurisdiction to submit how many people, citizens, are killed by police officers. There's no federal requirement for that. None. So the best estimates are there's 500 reported, approximately, give or take, every year. The best estimates are that there's 1,000 every year. We don't have that many officers being shot.
But do you know how many are going to get shot when the bad guys figure out that none of the police will shoot back?
But they are not even in the top 10 most dangerous occupations.
Now, Bruce, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you. I think if it ever becomes the case that the bad guys figure out that the cops won't pull a gun or will only pull it under the most extreme circumstances, you're going to end up with a lot more dead citizens and a lot more dead cops and a lot more living criminals. And you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Pleasure to be with you. And by the way, about the gentleman I was just talking to, the naysayer, A very nice Lars listener wrote in and said, have you seen this story? And we have. We've talked about it. This is October of last year. A Chicago police officer who is hospitalized after she was severely beaten said she was afraid to use her gun because of the scrutiny she would have faced, said Superintendent Eddie Johnson of the police in Chicago. On Wednesday morning, the police responded to a car crash. They encountered a man that police said was violent and under the influence of drugs. Three officers were hospitalized in the incident. One officer was severely beaten and told Superintendent Johnson she was afraid for her life, but afraid to use lethal force with all the attention on the police department's previous actions and fatal incident. She thought she was going to die. She knew she should shoot the guy, but she chose not to because she didn't want her family or the department to have to go through the scrutiny the next day on the news. Is that the kind of outcome that you want? Because that one doesn't make sense to me. Let's go to Donald, who's a naysayer. Hey, Donald, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. And thanks for listening.
Hey.
Go ahead.
Hey, Lars. Hey, first of all, I agree a lot on what you talk about, but not this subject. And you know, there's different areas for different situations for cops to be pulling guns out. But I consider myself being, I'm not a criminal, but I've been pulled over a few times and had cops pull their guns on me.
Hold on. The police have pulled their guns on you. Give me the circumstances where the police pulled the gun on you.
Down in California. I was pulled over for no reason. His reasoning was because I was driving a vehicle that was they were looking for, and mine fit that description, which it wasn't me. I had no idea.
That's a felony stop, isn't it? If they believe that you may be a criminal fleeing in a car, is that not a good reason?
I'm just letting you know, Lars.
No, but I'm asking you, is if the police see somebody driving a vehicle that matches the description from, say, a felony crime, a robbery, a murder, a rape, do you think they have reason to take extra precautions when they pull you over?
You can look at that either way.
No, I'm just asking you right now, answer the question. See, the fact that you dodge a question tells everybody what you know the answer is. You just don't want to say it.
No, I hear what you're saying, but you don't understand what I'm saying. You put everything through the words.
No, I'm asking you is if somebody drive a black Explorer. If they were looking for a black Explorer that had just fled the scene of an armed robbery, I would expect to be stopped by an officer who's going to take the proper precautions to perhaps confront an armed robber who's going to come out of that car. So you're feeling offended by the fact that they took proper precautions. It doesn't make sense to me. Let's go to Rick in Tacoma, listening on KVI. Hey, Rick, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. I called it on a different topic, and I'd still like to address that. I've been listening to the conversation. And people, just look at what's going on in Baltimore, Maryland. The police there are so hamstrung, so afraid to act. 317 homicides this year.
Is that what they want in Tacoma? Is that what they want in Tacoma and Seattle?
Oh, I don't know. Shama Sowat, up there on the city council, she spoke a couple weeks ago about the bloated police budget and how she'd like to transfer that to help out the homeless.
Wonderful. Yeah, Shama Sawant. Yeah. There's a great idea. Can you imagine Seattle with no police or with, say, 20% fewer police than they have right now? And imagine what it would be like for, and especially if she's looking out for the poor, who do you think crime has a greater effect on, the poor or the wealthy?
Oh, the poor.
Because when somebody steals your $2,000 get-to-work car, you probably don't have insurance to replace it, and that's that. You're out of luck. The affluent have insurance on the car, they'll get a new car within a day.
Yeah, but that's not what I call
it. Well, say it quick, because we're almost up to the top of the hour. What's on your mind?
My heart is breaking. Okay, I watched these women deliver their allegations against our president this morning. After the Billy Bush tape and listening to them, I mean, they sound sincere, Lars.
They may be. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I thought one of the highlights of last week was the fact that the House of Representatives had passed the Nationwide Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act. And I think it's going to be great for America if we can get it through the United States Senate. So I invited my friend, Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins, the award-winning Second Amendment columnist for Breitbart News, to talk about this and whether or not we can get it through the Senate. Doc, good to have you back on the program.
Lars, good to be with you.
So it's only been 5 days since the House passed, and it passed almost entirely on party lines, 236 to 190. And as I understand it, there are actually some House members, Democrats, who had voted for concealed carry reciprocity. And by the way, Doc, would you mind explaining that so that people can understand it? I've kind of flubbed it before, but there should be an easy way to understand what nationwide reciprocity for concealed carry means.
Yeah, the easy way is that it makes a concealed carry permit like a driver's license. So a permit from one state is valid in the other 49. That's it.
And none of us even wonder about the driver's license. If you ask somebody, so you're going to drive from California to Vermont, have you checked to see whether all the states you're going to drive through will accept your driver's license? People would think you're crazy if you said that.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And the catch is driving is not a right. But bearing arms is a right. So this is far more fundamental. And to handle it the way we handle driver's licenses is honestly, in my opinion, genius. You know, President Trump, when he was candidate Trump, September 18th, 2015, already expressed his support for this. And so when Representative Hudson put it forward on January 3rd of this year, we knew we have a president who will sign it. As you say, we got it through the House, and now we have to get it through the Senate.
By the way, Doc, is the current count still 11 states have what we call constitutional carry? That is, if you're not precluded by a felony conviction or a domestic violence or an assignment to a crazy hospital, that you're able to carry without even having a permit?
I believe that list is actually at 12 now. I believe North Dakota made 12, and that was earlier this year. But there's, you know, other news that you can't add to that because we don't want to state something that is if it isn't. But in Montana and Arkansas, throughout most of those states, there is open carry. There are just certain areas where you can't open carry. So I'm hoping that those two states will come along and finish the course and become constitutional carry, I should say, become constitutional carry states. But right now the list is at 12.
You know, Doc, there was something I heard over the weekend because I'm on a member of the board of directors of the Crime Prevention Research Center, the John Lotz Group out of New York, and I'm proud to be a board member of that. But one of the things John mentioned during our board meeting, because we had a conference call, I'm out here on the left coast, and he mentioned that some of the Democrat senators who plan to vote against concealed carry when it gets to the Senate are from states that already effectively have national reciprocity, in that if you're, say, the senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders, then your state already has constitutional carry, which means anybody from any other state can come to Vermont and carry in Vermont. They already effectively have nationwide reciprocity. So I think it's notable that something like 9 of the senators who plan to vote no on it because they're Democrats are voting no, even though their own states already have it.
I think it's notable, too, but it shows what we already know. They're not in this for legitimate, rational reasons. They're in it because they have an agenda. I know people get tired of that word, agenda, but ideologues have an agenda, and they're blind to facts. So I think what you're saying is, to a rational human, the point you're making needs to be made. And it's a great point, but it won't matter to those 9 individuals. Right. What I hope is that they are countered by the red state Democrats who have to vote pro-gun if they want to get reelected in 2018. I think those are the Democrats we have to go for and we have to persuade.
Well, I wish I could say that some of them are out in my neck of the woods, but Oregon and Washington seem to be such blue states that, you know, Merkley and Wyden. Wyden doesn't even live in Oregon. He lives in New York. And Cantwell and Murray can safely vote against it, vote against the Second Amendment rights of the people in the states they represent with no fear at all that they'll lose anything at election time.
That's sad. I mean, it is sad when you have that situation, but that's balanced out by John Tester in Montana. He's a Democrat in a very red state. Senator Joe Manchin in West Virginia, he's a Democrat in a very red state. And I believe there are 7 to 8 others who are in that same situation, and they are going to have to convince red state voters to reelect them in November of this coming year. It's going to be hard to do that if you spend the end of 2017 voting against national reciprocity.
So is there anything else that us citizens can do to try to push this debate along and get it? Because at the very least, I'd like to see them cast the 60 votes so that the thing can come up for a vote, because then we could at least say, well, here are the senators who vote against your Second Amendment rights.
Exactly right. I believe the thing you have to do is literally melt the phone lines coming into Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's office. I believe he has to hear from the people in an overwhelming manner. And that would mean calling him, tweeting him, writing him. I always stress, when you talk to these people, be polite. And I know your listeners are polite people, but I'm just saying, don't let anger get the best of you. When you call them, just say, hey, you represent me as Senate Majority Leader. You represent the whole country, and right, we want national reciprocity.
See, that's the part of this that bothers me, is that McConnell could change and say, all right, we're going to give up the filibuster. Because it seems to me, Dr. Hawkins, I'm talking to A.W.R. Hawkins. You can read what he writes at Breitbart News. He's their Second Amendment columnist. One of the things that bothers me most about this, just in terms of the way that government is done, is that the government is supposed to represent us. We have representatives in the House of Representatives, and they voted on this measure, and they voted for it. We know that there is a majority of senators who we believe would vote for this if they could vote for it, but there are not 60 senators who would vote for it. So the fact that there are not 60 who would vote to, you know, end cloture and, you know, have the vote and all, means that those who represent us, who are a majority, don't get a chance to vote. Now, how is that representative government if a majority of our senators believe that this bill should pass, but it never gets voted on? That doesn't sound like representative government to me.
No, it doesn't. And it doesn't. Your point is well made. The other point that bothers me is it also gives cover to some people. And I believe it lets some people vote for reciprocity, knowing that it won't reach the 60 threshold, so they don't have to really worry about it being put in place. They don't have to be gung-ho about it. I see that whole situation as a mess, and I'm like you. I think that rule needs to be changed, and it can be changed. It needs to be changed so that the majority can pass the legislation that the majority was elected to pass.
Dr. Hawkins, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for the work you do at Breitbart News.
Thank you, Lars. Great to be with you.
Dr. A.W.R. Hawkins, talking about the legislation that has now passed the House of Representatives so that your concealed carry permit, no matter where you are in America, could travel across state lines and be just as useful in another state as it is in your home state. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. By the way, you know that New York City was the subject of another terrorist attack today. And one of the differences in the Trump era is that when you saw the governor of New York State and the mayor of New York City and the police commissioner come out to speak just a few hours after that explosion in a subway at the Port Authority bus terminal, you saw them immediately label it as terrorism. That is something that didn't used to happen under a previous administration. Secondly, though, there are already people debating about what are the rights of the terrorist. This guy was carrying a pipe bomb. It blew up near his belly. He apparently is going to survive those wounds, and thank goodness other people were only wounded and not killed. But this guy is a terrorist. And apparently, even though he's from Bangladesh, he's an immigrant to the United States. And let me tell you something about Bangladeshi immigrants to the United States. In the last 10 years, the U.S. has resettled 142,000 Bangladesh nationals on the basis of family ties. They say that a significant driver of this is chain migration. which President Donald Trump has been begging the Congress to reform. The process by which foreign nationals permanently resettle within the United States, and then subsequently they bring over their foreign relatives, who have the opportunity to bring over their foreign relatives until entire extended families are resettled in the country. President Trump has called on Congress to end a chain migration and eliminate the green card lottery. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has echoed that call, explaining that lawmakers have to end chain migration in exchange for any deal granting work permits and federal benefits to illegal immigrants under the age of 36. Now, let me tell you the numbers. In 2008, the last year of the Bush administration, 8,000 people from Bangladesh. The next year, the first year of Obama, it jumped 50% to 13,000 from Bangladesh. The next year, it was more than 11,000. The year after that, more than 13,000. The year after that, more than 13,000. And finally, in the last year of the Obama administration, 18,000 people from Bangladesh. And this is the way we get paid back: by a cab driver who worked for an electrical firm who packs a pipe bomb into the subway. And thank goodness, the person most badly hurt by the pipe bomb was the bomber, was the terrorist. And the only question now is, should he be treated as an ordinary criminal or as a foreign enemy combatant? I think you know what I would like to see. Let's go to Matt in Bellingham. Hey, Matt, thanks for listening on KGMI. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
In the era of Trump and all this crazy collusion talk, I was wondering, can Trump call for a private investigation, independent counsel investigation into Democrats colluding with the American media to not win the election?
I think he probably could. He could call for that. I think it'd be better if it came from the Justice Department. I think crimes were committed by Hillary Clinton. I think she cheated Bernie Sanders out of a fair shot. I think that we know that there was a lot of collusion going on within the Democrat Party. We know the DNC paid for part of that Steele dossier. We know that they paid $12 million to Fusion GPS. We know that Fusion GPS worked with the Russians and that they worked to try to subvert the American election. And I think Hillary Clinton and the DNC were right in the middle of it. So, Matt, I think the short answer is, yeah, I think it can happen. The only question is, will the rest of the deep state allow it to happen? Let's go to Jamie in Battleground. Hey, Jamie, you called in about Initiative 940.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah. Now, why do these cops need all these special immunities and qualifications like qualified immunity if everything they do is clean? They don't do things that are clean. They're corrupt, and they need...
You mean like lying about who you are?
They need to be made to bow...
Theodore, do you mean like lying about who you are?
Listen, you are an...
Okay. At that point, you get dumped. Theodore, you can't swear on the air. Let's go to Sean in Wilsonville. Hey, Sean, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, Lars, how you doing, man? I'm a new listener.
Thank you.
My brother-in-law actually doesn't care for you too much, so it just made me have to listen to you. So,
well, I appreciate it.
I'm not too much of a... You're welcome. I'm not too much of a naysayer as far as the initiative for being able to sue law enforcement officers, but you mentioned earlier, you kind of answered my question. If they're acting within the scope of the oath that they swear, they should react. They have the right to. They should not be sued. No, they should not be afraid to draw their weapon. My question was, if they act inappropriately and they do things out of that scope, and the departments that they work for protect them,
yeah,
what do we have as citizens? You know, what right do we have, or recourse do we have to actually go after another citizen for doing injustice to us?
And
that's kind of my question.
Sean, that's a great question. And the answer is, you have a lot. And let me tell you what the lot is. Number one, you know that if the police officer broke the law, that he can be prosecuted. We just saw an officer last week sent to prison for a couple of decades because he shot a motorist illegally. He committed murder. You remember the case, right, where the motorist is running away from the cop, and the cop, for no reason, shoots him in the back when the man was presenting no threat. So that's number one. Number two, the department itself will conduct a review within the department. And the case that was brought up by the previous caller, Officer Burke, who shot the man who was whittling, he was a Native American man who was whittling, The department in that case found that his shooting of the man was thoroughly unjustified. And it was because of that that he ended up, you know, quitting the department and leaving. So you might say, well, that's not enough. Well, they didn't have enough to prosecute him. And I think you can understand why. The officer could argue, I saw a man with a knife. The man refused to drop the knife and I ended up shooting him. You can't say that he was acting, you know, without acting within what he was allowed to do as a police officer to a potential threat. But the shooting review board said, that's not, it's actually called something else, but it effectively is a shooting review board. They said, yep, your shooting of this man was thoroughly unjustified. If you just spotted a man and wanted to check on him, you should have stayed in your car, rolled up on him, indicated over the loud hailer for the man to drop the weapon, et cetera, and it might have come out very differently. Instead, you decided to step out of the car. So you have that level of protection. You have citizen review boards that frequently will review cases, and almost every city has one of these citizen review boards. So you've got that. And if you decide that you want to bring a civil suit, in Washington State, the only protection is that in the civil suit has to show that the officer acted out of malice. Well, if the officer was acting just trying to do his job, should he get sued if there was no malice there? He's just doing his job. If he made a mistake and broke bureau policies, he's going to get fired. If he actually broke the law, he's going to get prosecuted. But if he didn't do either one of those two, do you want every officer who ever engages in a use of force, whether it's a baton or a taser or a gun or anything else, to get sued? We're going to paralyze our police departments if we go that far. But you have other protections.
Agreed. My father and brothers all were in law enforcement. I grew up in a family like that. And the big thing for us was, you know, my dad always taught us to be honorable, respectful, and do what you need to do up and up. And I've personally witnessed in my life a couple of incidents with relatives where departments would actually protect the officer, unfortunately.
I think they should. Well, they shouldn't if they've done wrong. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you and always glad to welcome back to the program, especially to talk about fake news, one of my favorite journalism professors, a Professor Peter Laufer, who's a journalism prof at the University of Oregon, a broadcaster, a filmmaker, and the author of several books, most recently Organic, A Journalist's Quest to Discover the Truth Behind Food Labeling, and soon a turtle book as well, and a turtle deal with Discovery. How are you doing, Professor?
I am doing so well, Lars, and happy as always to speak with you. Can we take a minute before we talk about what you want to talk about for me to ask you a question? Because I wanted to take advantage of your audience. I think that either you or somebody out there can help me with this.
I have never refused to take a question. So what's the question?
I'm sitting here having lunch with my wife, looking out on the deck, and we have these decorative lamps. They're like Christmas tree lamps, except they're white, to light up the deck at night. You know what those are like.
Yep.
And a squirrel just came down onto the railing and started to lick the lamp bulbs.
Uh-oh.
One after another, and took his paws, holding them the same way a squirrel will hold a nut. And he's holding the lamp one after another, he did them, and was licking them. What is going on?
His tongue is cold, and he wants to warm it up?
I don't know. No, they're off.
They're off.
They're off, yes.
Maybe the squirrel associates the smooth, you know, the smooth shape of the light bulbs in there as it reminds him of what food tastes like or looks like or the size of it or something. I don't know. I don't have any greater expertise than that.
And Sheila suggested maybe because it was frost covered this morning, there's a little water residue left and he's getting a drink.
Could be.
I don't know. Well, maybe somebody out there in your audience has a clue.
Well, if they do, I'll be sure to share it with you. Let me ask you this, Professor. We have now had an amazing number of fake news incidents involving the President of the United States calling out the mainstream media, and in some cases, the media calling each other out over some really screwy things that they have done. And what struck me is we've all made mistakes. If you work in journalism, you're going to make mistakes. But the fact is, the mainstream media's mistakes always augur against Donald Trump. and in favor of a left-wing point of view. And I haven't seen one yet where it augured in Trump's favor and against their own personal political bias. And it makes me believe that there is some political bias in those people working in the mainstream media. And I could give you the most recent examples. CNN ran out a totally false story on Friday morning about WikiLeaks, which they then have had to correct, but they have not retracted. They were called out by the Washington Post. A Washington Post reporter ran out a photo of Friday night's big gathering in Pensacola, Florida, for the president to speak. And he ran out a picture that showed a nearly empty arena. And he said, stacked to the rafters. He was making fun of Trump's claim, even though that night when the president actually spoke, the place was stacked to the rafters. And then we've had other incidents as well where we have reporters churning out absolutely false stories and always to the detriment of Donald J. Trump.
Well, what you ask is the sort of thing that really mandates an analysis and a look at stories and then an accounting to determine whether what seems, according to the way you just kind of spelled it out, looks like it might augur some sort of prejudice. But Lars, the reality is this, and you said it too, and you know it, that there's a difference between error and intent. Error versus intent.
Mm-hmm.
And the so-called media, which is such a broad stroke these days and just carries a negative connotation with too many people, no matter their points of view. And media, of course, is this huge word that means everything, including Christmas lamps that squirrels are licking. But the news media, which is what we're talking about, the news media, there are all types there. There are types that are using it to further their point of view, of course. And then there are those who are the journalists. And it is rare to find a journalist, whether for personal opportunistic reasons like Janet Cook, who won the Pulitzer Prize that got taken away because of the story she did on a heroin addict who was a composite, not a singular heroin addict, nine years old, I believe he was.
That was fake news.
Somebody like that who's apparently doing it for personal opportunistic reasons, or somebody who's doing it as an institution like Fox News and the Democrat National Committee operative Seth Rich and their claim that there was something to do with WikiLeaks and his murder, whether it's that kind of a fomented story designed to cast aspersions or it's error rather than intent, is worth looking at. I would suggest to you that in terms of people who you and I would agree are journalists, it's going to be error, not intent. And the real villain, Lars, and here I can promote my own work, and I know you'll let me, the real villain is speed up. And that's why I wrote the book that's published by Oregon State University, Slow News. The problem is that everything is sped up to the point where there is no time to report.
And hold on a second, Professor.
Error.
No, but hold up. Error. Hold up a second. When you say there's no time, so you're a Washington Post reporter. You show up in Pensacola to cover the president's speech. You know about what time it's happening. You arrive at the arena hours and hours before the event, and you snap a picture of a nearly empty arena. I'm sure there's a time in the upcoming Super Bowl where you could show up at the arena the day of the contest and snap a picture, and you could say, look, nobody showed up for the Super Bowl, as long as you snapped a picture hours and hours before the event. But in that case, why would a reporter even do that if they knew that it wasn't an accurate representation of what was going on there? That one's hard to excuse. Before we get to the one where CNN misread a date on an email and read it as September 4th, which made it a major story, instead of September 14th, which made it a nothing story, or the one where Brian Ross got suspended because he had been told that the campaign of Donald Trump had told staffers to be in touch with the Russians, and it wasn't the campaign at all. It was the presidency of President-elect Donald Trump. How is it that all of these mistakes always augur in the same direction? Because if it's just error...
Here's an example, Lars, of
of how you and I get faced with this so many times when we talk that we simply, no matter how hard we try, we can't disagree. And where we'll agree is that there needs to be a study of this, because the way you lay it out, sure, it is something that somebody could say, yeah, what Lars is saying makes sense, and I agree with him. The way I lay it out makes sense, too, and that is that there is such phenomenal speed up, such pressure on reporters to tweet this and email that and post on Facebook this and get onto the website that mistakes are made. Certainly mistakes that
a mistake are, like saying this is a picture
right away
of a...
and they should be apologized for and they shouldn't be made. But it's this question of error versus intent. And if you've got what we could agree on are legitimate news women and newsmen out there, news reporters, journalists doing their job, it's going to be very hard to find in with that definition intent.
Oh, I think I could. I could in a heartbeat, because Professor Laufer, you and I would probably agree that news is about the man who bites the dog, not the dog who bites the man, because dogs biting men is very common. Men biting dogs is not. So the story for the Washington Post reporter, for example, Donald Trump has been pulling record-sized crowds since the summer of 2015. Agreed?
I can't tell you that. He's been pulling crowds, whether they're record size,
well,
I would. And this is where I am no longer the talk show host. I'm the university professor. I have to say that I would need to study that.
But
professor,
how often have you ever seen...
Yes.
I know that most major national-level politicians have occasionally pulled huge crowds. But they've also pulled small crowds. Hillary Clinton, at the end of her campaign, before the vote in November of last year, she had a tough time getting 200 or 300 people to show up at a venue. So the idea of somebody who could routinely pull crowds in the five-figure range, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 people, that would be unusual. So the Washington Post reporter might have been right to say, if Donald Trump spoke in Pensacola, Florida last Friday night, and he pulled a crowd of a few hundred people or a couple of thousand people, that would have been the man biting the dog. It would have been unusual. Except that he could see from the photo, and he knew what time he took the photo, that the photo did not reflect the crowd that showed up for the president. It was hours before the president spoke.
Would be fascinating to pose the question to him and find out. I wonder if he's available. Have you guys tried to find him and see if you can get him on the air?
I will tell you, Professor, other than Mark Thiessen, nobody at the Washington Post talks to us.
You're joking.
No, they don't.
Why wouldn't they talk to you?
Because they don't like us asking
friends.
They don't like uncomfortable questions.
I can't imagine. Did you try? Why not have one of your producer staff give them a call? I'll tell you what,
just for you, I will call, but it's usually a waste of time because there are certain institutions that just routinely say we will not allow anybody from our staff to talk to you, especially about a hot button like this. Last thing, though, CNN has not retracted that story from Friday. They have corrected it, and they have tried to explain why they got it so terribly wrong. Because, Professor, you know that by the 14th of September, everybody in America had access to those WikiLeaks downloads. My wife had access to them. She downloaded them and read them. It was no big deal on the 14th of September. On the 4th, it would have been. How is it that CNN can get it so wrong with all the gatekeepers involved in that process? They don't manage to notice that the email they're talking about says September 14 and not September 4?
Yeah, but then how is it that Fox News can go on and on about that? Rich, you know what?
Here's
the deal. Here's the deal, Lars.
Yeah.
Here's the deal. First of all, I look forward to finding out what the score was doing. Second of all, when you list the institutions that will never talk to you, it'll never work to add the University of Oregon, because you know I always enjoy getting a call from you and like talking about this sort of stuff or squirrels with you on the air. And third of all, I do believe that this deserves some attention in terms of a quantitative study, but I will bet you a beer at your favorite pub in either Eugene or Portland or both that error versus intent is the key here.
and the speed up that is going on in journalism is the villain, and that a real journalist, the kind that you and I could agree on is a real journalist, is not going out looking for ways to fabricate stories for their own personal point of view.
Well, on another day, we should talk about about the estimable Dan Rather and efforts to go out and manufacture news. But, Professor, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks so much for taking the time today.
It's always a delight to speak with you and your audience, Lars.
Take care now. Professor Peter Lauffer from the University of Oregon, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. By the way, George in Seattle writes in by email, talk@LarsLarson.com, about the conversation I just had with the professor. Lars Weigel, the reporter from the Washington Post, did not make a mistake. He lied on purpose. He did this as part of the media's push for the 25th Amendment. Even though he got caught lying, his story still got out to millions, and it was meant to give the impression that Trump has a mental problem where he has a need to boast about things untrue. In other words, he's a megalomaniacal liar and as such is unfit to be president. Weigel has also made it seem like President Trump's popularity was way down, better for the impeachment effort. As usual, Trump told the truth. It was packed to the rafters with cheering people, along with many more thousands attending outside who couldn't even get in the building. That was more than they could handle, and the media once again exposed themselves, which they do on a daily basis, as being far-left biased liars out to get President Trump. And a number of you have pointed out that if the professor's theory was right, and it's all about the speed up of mainstream media, why is it we didn't see the same number or even a few mistakes made during the Obama era that made President Obama look in a negative light? Let's go to Carrie in Vancouver. Hey, Carrie, welcome to the program. What's up?
Hey, just how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Hey, I just actually was calling about a couple topics ago when you're talking about the police officers and the different, you know, the lawsuits and the being held accountable and all that. And I wanted to ask you your thoughts on the outcome of the Daniel Shaver shooting or murder, however you want to, whatever you want to call it.
I know that's a controversial.
No, it didn't make big news.
Well, this happened down in Mesa, Arizona. I didn't have as much of a close view of that because obviously the farther you are away from things, you have to depend on the published reports then. But obviously there were questions about the guy had his hands in the air. He'd apparently been drinking. He apparently had pointed a rifle out the window of either a hotel or a home. And I know that it was a hotel, and he said he was showing the rifle because it was a rifle you could use to shoot varmints more than anything else, because he was in the, I think he was in the exterminator business. And in the end, the police came and they said, hey, you know, you've got to get down on your knees. And I'm just going to tell you that I think the system we have where you have police review boards, you have the courts, you have the police, accountability agencies themselves, and then you've got the district attorney that's going to review it to see whether or not laws were broken, that I think that's plenty. And I think the idea of further tying the hands of police is only going to end up with innocent citizens and police officers shot to death. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live on the Radio Northwest Network and glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. We've got the New York City terror suspect, a man with a pipe bomb strapped to his own torso, and apparently set the bomb off, blowing him up, but not killing him. He's still alive. And the question now is whether he should be treated like a regular criminal or should he be treated like an enemy combatant. And then, of course, it raises the issue that the president has brought up again, and that is, should we do something about chain immigration to the United States? Chain migration is one of those little tricks where somebody comes into the United States, then they're allowed to bring in their family members, and then those family members bring in their family members, and so on, until you have a tremendous number of people here, including this Bangladeshi who's identified as the terror suspect in New York City. You've got the question of why major media keep making major mistakes when it comes to stories and why those mistakes always seem to end with President Donald Trump getting the short end of the stick. And when you let wolves run rampant over Oregon and Washington, and then some of them end up getting shot, I'm not advocating that people do it. It is a criminal act, but I'm not surprised that people are doing it. Officials say two wolves that were being monitored have been found shot dead in eastern Washington. The Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife discovered one of the two female wolves in Stevens County through a collar that stopped working in November. She was found dead in an area where the monitor showed her last known location. The animals were members of the Smackout and Dirty Shirt Packs. Conservation Northwest is offering a $10,000 reward. Poachers could face a state fine of up to $5,000 and $100,000 in federal fines, as well as a year in jail or a year in prison. The question is, what do you expect people to do when you start populating the wild areas of Oregon and Washington with wolves that are going to go after some people's livestock and take away their, well, their ability to earn a living? To your calls, though, all over the great Pacific Northwest at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Let's go first to Ron in Tacoma. Hey, Ron, sorry about the long wait. Welcome to the program, and thanks for listening on KVI. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. Well, I just wanted to make a statement and ask you a question.
All right, go for it.
My statement is basically to the Democrats. We've already chosen our president, and we got Roy Moore, and we're choosing him. And the reason we're doing that is because we don't want to choose communism. That's all I got to say about that.
All right.
Two, I didn't know that New York just became Republican. I could have swore I heard on your broadcast that the governor of New York City made a comment, and I could have swore I heard it on the tape, saying that, you should speak out, and we got all these great people that are speaking out now. Now, that's funny, because I remember under 9 years of the Democrat Party, if you spoke out in New York, you were a racist. Does anybody recall that? I think we even had a gentleman or a neighbor to one of the terrorist attacks a few years back made that exact comment, said that I was afraid to say anything because they didn't want to be homophobes.
Ron, I got to tell you something. Do you know how you can manufacture conservatives?
How?
A conservative is a liberal who has been mugged. You ever heard that before?
I have heard that before.
Now imagine this. You're a good old-fashioned Hillary voting liberal. I mean, you believe in Chucky Schumer. You believe in the Democrat Party. You believe that unborn babies are not real, that they're not people. But remember that, of course, Hitler killed Jewish people because they weren't really people, and Democrats kill unborn babies because they aren't really people. And then one day, as you're walking down the street of, say, New York City, you get mugged. Or let's say you happen to be standing not far away from a Bangladeshi man with a pipe bomb attached to his abdomen, and it blows up. What do you think happens to all your good liberalism and Democrat warm feelings?
Yeah, I think that goes out the window.
I think it does, too. I think people who were the biggest, staunchest defenders of open borders and allow anybody in from anywhere, anytime, without questions, when the pipe bomb goes off not far from you or your family members in the subway, I think it has a tendency to generate a lot of conservatives.
Well, let's hope so, Lars. I think we need a few more of those.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, in fact, I was really heartened to hear the comments this morning from some of those in charge in New York City.
Hours ago, the governor...
Good morning to everyone. The first news this morning was obviously very frightening and disturbing. When you hear about a bomb in the subway station, which is in many ways one of our worst nightmares, the reality turns out better than the initial expectation and fear. You had a number of law enforcement agencies that did a fantastic job. The NYPD, the PAPD, the Port Authority Police, the MTA Police.
All of a sudden, all the police are your friends. Whereas as a Democrat, typically, a lot of your unkindest words are reserved for the people who are serving in blue. You don't think much of them until they actually turn out to be your lifesaver. Let's go to Michael in Lake Grove, Oregon. Hey, Michael, welcome to the Lawrence Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Oh, you got a smartphone there that tells you exactly where I am. That's so creepy, but I was going to tell your call screener.
No worries.
Listening here on your home station at KXL. It's been a while since I called in, but he said you might be in the mood for a challenging kind of off-the-topic question. And it's a sad subject, so I don't want to sound too happy here. We're just driving back Eugene today, me and my liberal mom.
Mm-hmm.
And all these massacres and crimes and stuff. I know the overall violent crime rate is generally lower in many ways than it is in the 90s, and that's a good thing. We've worked hard, and we put a lot of people in prison and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And these mass shootings are just one-off and stuff like that. Why? I mean, gun haters blame guns. I've never blamed that.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to just be a philosophical person for a minute and just speculate, think about it, why does our great country and society seem to produce so many more completely nutso, evil, violent psychopaths, whatever you want to call them, whether it's ones that showed sign years in fact, oh, we're not surprised he did that, or the guy in Las Vegas where I live now, who everybody was surprised, I can't believe he did that. Have you ever given any thought to that lately?
Oh, sure, I have.
People were like,
because an awful lot of the people, I think that we've seen a dramatic drop over the last 40 years in violent crime in general. The ones that are tougher to predict are the ones that come from the person who doesn't give you the outward signs. I mean, the Vegas shooter, where were the outward signs that he was going to go crazy? This Bangladeshi.
He was mean to his girlfriend in public. That's the only thing I can think
and,
of.
And he was, you know, he yelled at her in the Starbucks.
Uh-huh.
But what do you want to bet we're going to hear that this Bangladeshi guy that tried to blow himself up in the subway in New York with a pipe bomb, we're going to hear that he was a perfectly nice guy who was friendly to his, well, maybe not to his dog, but he was friendly to everybody else around him, and he was a very nice guy, and that nobody had any warning. I don't know of a way to track those down, especially when somebody is, you know, I'm guessing that we're going to find out he was radicalized, that he was probably radicalized online. Some of it may have had something to do with a mosque in New York, but it may not have, as well.
And that brings me to one minor point where I disagree with you. I understand Trump wanted to do the Muslim ban, and at first I'm like, geez, I don't know. But the guy who killed the second worst massacre, that was a guy who self-radicalized into Islam and killed all those people in Orlando last year. He was born here, so the banning people there wouldn't have done any good. That's closing the door after the horse escapes.
Except,
how do we keep the internet? How do we keep those websites off the internet? If there's a way to do that,
you can't under the First Amendment to the Constitution. If the government went in and said, well, except for this, when you say it was a Muslim ban, it was not a Muslim ban. It was a ban on an entry from seven specific countries.
Oh, now, I know. That's just shorthand. I fell into the trap, too. Sorry about that.
Well, but all I'm saying is that, and do I expect that any one technique used by the police is the be-all and end-all? You're acting as though it is. Mm-hmm. So that if we have one self-radicalized Muslim crazy who's from America, that the ban on people coming in from places that have some Muslim craziness going on doesn't make any sense. Of course it does, because you're not trying to solve the entire problem with one simple restriction. But you are. Now, let me ask you this. Knowing that so many people, literally hundreds of people who have come in as refugees from Muslim parts of the world have turned into terrorists, literally hundreds of them. And I can give you examples of those going back over the last 5-6 years.
Or at least potential terrorists, the Somali guy
who was going to blow up
the Pioneer Square celebration.
He was
a refugee, I think.
He was. Yeah. But there were dozens of others. But if you know they're coming in from there, does it make sense to start limiting who comes in?
I generally agree, just saying, don't think that's going to solve the problem. It just might reduce the odds a little.
And that's all you're looking at, isn't it? I mean, I'll bet you have a lock on your front door and a lock on your back door. Does that eliminate the problem of burglary of your house?
Oh, no, of course not.
It just reduces the odds of it, right?
I don't agree with you on all the stuff. I'm maybe a little less conservative on some things, on issues a little more on a couple others, but you're a master of analogies and metaphors, so I think I get better at using those myself.
Which one do you disagree with? I'm just curious, since you raised my curiosity, what do you disagree with me about?
I'm not as passionate as an absolutist on Second Amendment rights as you are. I'm not worried that no matter how much she might want to, Nancy Pelosi or anyone is ever going to succeed in truly taking away our guns. And it's sad to listen to some of my fellow gun owners spin themselves into worry and paranoia over something like that.
Well, hold on a second. Let me offer you some evidence.
It's my fault for getting away from my own original.
It's okay. Michael, thank you very much. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Rob writes in, Lars, New York City terror attack suspect, the FBI to scrub his PC and phones for terror connections. I hope it's not the same FBI crew that searched Hillary's computers and phones. Jones. I was going to add laugh out loud, but it's really not that funny. And he's very right about that. Let's go to naysayer Gary. Hey, Gary, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. You know how much we revere and adore naysayers on this program, don't you?
I do, actually, yes.
Okay. Go for it.
So the reason I'm calling, I don't usually agree with you, but I actually find you to be a pretty sensible person most of the time.
I try.
And that's why I listen to you.
Thank you.
But the reason I'm calling, I read your Facebook post last week, and you kind of referred to Al Franken as a molester, which I can't necessarily disagree with you if the allegations are true. But what I'm confused by is kind of your support of Roy Moore. Aside from the sexual allegations, I know you're a conservative. Mm-hmm. I know you're a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But he said lots of awful things over the years. So far, let's see. I have some things written down. He said no
Muslims sure
ever
accurate.
Hold office. They are. I'm not trying to BS anybody or joke around. But, yes, mm-hmm. he said no Muslim should ever hold office. Drive-by shootings are due to evolution being taught in school because we teach kids that if they're animals and that's where they come from, that's how they'll act. Let's see. 9/11 occurred because our nation distanced itself from God, referred to the incident as divine punishment. Homosexual conduct should be illegal. He also said homosexuality is no different than bestiality in several interviews.
You're going to list off so many. I'm not going to be able to. I'm not going to be able to make a meaningful reply to any of them.
Okay, I'll do one last one. Last week, in a speech, he referred to Native Americans and Asians as reds and yellows. My question to you is: I know that you're a good Republican. I don't always agree with you, but I can't imagine Roy Moore winning a Senate seat is good for your party. And I'm kind of curious where his Christian values are, because I know your Christian values differ greatly from Roy Moore's.
Oh, I think some of my values probably do differ, and in many cases, they're very much the same. I've actually expressed the thought that a real practicing Muslim who practices Sharia law, that Sharia is incompatible with constitutional government like we have here in America. And I've said that at least 100 times. So on that, I would agree with Moore about the difficult spot it puts you in if you really stand by your beliefs that Sharia law applies. I would agree with him. But he was actually making reference to Keith Ellison being sworn in into Congress about a decade ago.
Quran, correct?
Yeah, about a decade ago.
I know what he's referring to.
Okay.
Yes, but you don't think homosexuality and bestiality are the same?
No, I don't. But I think that there are times where I've made comparisons saying, if you're going to say that certain things can be outlawed or cannot be outlawed, that you're going to get, some other consequences to that, because then you've opened yourself up to other kinds of comparisons that are going to be difficult to reject. So you got to be careful the basis on which you allow certain things to be said. But I guess this is all getting very convoluted. Roy Moore is who he is. He's going to be chosen, I think, tomorrow by the voters of Alabama. And the significant question isn't whether Lars Larson likes him or Gary likes him from Vancouver. The question is, do you think that if the people of a state choose somebody to represent them and they know about all of these complaints about his activities when he was in his 30s, when he may or may not have been dating teenage girls? I understand that recently he's actually given a full-throated denial that he dated teenage girls, but I'm not sure I'm convinced by that, because he also gave a less than full-throated denial of it. So the question really is not whether or not the people of Alabama have a right to choose him. It's whether or not the Senate has a right to reject him as the choice from that state. And I think that's the critical question that I want to ask you. Do you think that the U.S. Senate should reject Roy Moore?
Yes.
Okay, then,
yeah, absolutely.
Then let me ask you a question. Should the Senate have kicked Ted Kennedy out of the U.S. Senate? Because Roy Moore may have done a lot of terrible things. He never killed a girl, though, and Ted Kennedy did. We could also bring up Robert Byrd, whose past associations with the Klan. He was a recruiter for the Klan. Should he have been kicked out? Yes or no?
Yes.
Should Ted Kennedy have been kicked out?
Yes. To me, this isn't like a Democrat versus Republican.
I didn't say Democrat or Republican. I just gave you specific names.
Yes, but I know they're. I know who they are. I mean, yes, I think people, if they're caught with their pants down or if they kill somebody accidentally, yeah, they probably shouldn't represent people all of America.
But in this case, it was Al Franken's colleagues who said he had to go, right?
And I think he should go, too. I think if, you know, I like Al Franken, but I think what he did is bad, and I think that he should step down.
Can you tell me one significant good thing that Al Franken did for America?
I agreed with a lot of what he said.
No, tell me one significant thing that he did. A bill that he got passed, some change he made. He was there a decade. Did he do anything good for us?
I'm not 100% sure I can answer that question. I don't.
And how can you draw the conclusion that he was a good guy if he can't name one good thing he did? You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. Interesting story out of the People's Republic of Eugene, which is normally reliably liberal. Two Oregon pot shops say they're getting harassed for having a similar name to another marijuana-related business, not a marijuana business itself, owned by a white nationalist. The Register Guard reports that Oregon Growers Analytical, known as OG Analytical, is a state-accredited marijuana testing lab whose owner has been linked to white pride events and neo-Nazi groups. Now, two other businesses, Eugene OG and OG Collective in Salem, say they're getting harassed by phone for the name mix-up. These businesses say they have nothing to do with this. Days earlier, OG Analytical's Bethany Sherman issued a statement saying she's not a neo-Nazi, but that she was proud to be white. She also said that she would resign or sell the company that she founded, which verifies pot potency and pesticide contamination. I guess she was found guilty of committing a thought crime. And you know what happens to thought criminals here in the Northwest? They are driven from polite society. Let's go to Jim in Amity, Oregon. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, one thing about being on hold for 27 hours straight is you get to hear a lot of topics you'd like to jump in on.
Right.
So, but I'm going to try to stick with what I had a couple comments and a question or two for you. First of all, what really bugs me, I listen to The Rush and you, and you're always saying Democratic Party. There's nothing Democratic.
No, I say Democrat Party.
Pardon.
I say Democrat
well,
Party.
Not 100% of the time.
Oh, okay, fine,
hey,
whatever.
Don't say Democratic.
Okay.
Anyway.
Fair enough.
What is going to stop our illustrious governess if we get the reciprocal carry from saying, hey, we're a sanctuary state and we're not going to go along with that? And what do you think?
Well, federal law would stop her. Federal law is Trump's state law.
Well, isn't okay.
So if you have a federal law, the federal law trumps state law. So, for example, she couldn't get away. You know that a CDL, a commercial driver's license, is a federal license, although it's issued by the state. It's a federal license. So it would be like Kate Brown trying to say, we're not going to let anybody drive in our state unless they have an Oregon CDL, which doesn't actually exist. There's no such thing. They're all federal.
Right.
So I don't know how she would go about doing that.
I wonder if she just put up some resistance to it or something. Anyway,
she could try.
How is PERS doing with the stock market going way up?
They're up $2 billion, and that means they're only short about $50 billion. The Trump stock market has delivered an additional $2 billion so far this year, but they are still about $48 to $50 billion upside down. Part of that is because they lie to themselves by saying that they're making a 7.3% return when they're actually making a return about a half point lower than that. And if you think a half point is small potatoes, it isn't when you're talking about that kind of money. Thanks for the call, by the way. Let's go to Ed in Linwood, Washington. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network.
Thank you. I've met you a couple of times at the KBI programs, but beyond that, comment is Baltimore police have been told, not that they're going to get sued, but so many restrictions that the number of people being killed in Baltimore are something like, what, 3-4 times what they were before?
Yep. It's much higher. And so the question is, will people in Washington State vote for this initiative 940, We had planned, well, we had actually scheduled to have the campaign manager for I-940 on the show today, and he backed out literally 3 minutes before he was supposed to be on the air, which I think is an act of cowardice that doesn't deserve much. But he's...
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. He's had something important. He'll be back on Tuesday or Wednesday.
Yeah, sure. I mean, he's a former NFL player. If he can stand, you know, the tough times of being out on the field with those guys, he can take a couple of questions from me. But he kind of chickened out at the last minute. And yet, will Washington voters vote for a ballot measure that would make it easier to sue cops, which means the cops are going to be more reluctant to use their guns?
I'll tell you what's going to happen. The union will say we want a $100 million liability policy on everyone.
Well, except the liability, do you think, I'm not sure that the state or the city could actually carry personal liability insurance for each and every cop that would pay off on the personal lawsuits against them. Do you think that's even legal?
No, it doesn't matter. They just pay the premium.
Oh, I see. So you'd say that
premium.
You're going to pay a premium for each and every individual officer to have their own liability policy. It's an interesting point. On that note, let's go to Larry in Bellingham, listening on KGMI. Hey, Larry, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, it's Larry from the Democratic Republic of Bellingham.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, on these police shootings, you know, one in Minneapolis where he shot that guy sitting in his car with his girlfriend in the passenger seat and the kid in the back, that was totally uncalled for. And then the one you mentioned that where he shot the guy in the hallway, you know, that's another one that was totally uncalled
for. Okay, hold up a second, Larry. I'm going to call BS on that, all right? The man in Mesa, Arizona, who was shot, I did some reading on this over the weekend because of, you know, I knew it was likely to come up. So the police respond to a motel where a guy who we later know is 0.29 blood alcohol. So he's, you know, three times drunk. And he is an exterminator guy or a pest removal guy who will go into big stores like Walmart stores and get rid of birds that have flown in there by shooting them with a pellet rifle. So he's showing his buddies the pellet rifle while he's 0.29 BAC. And people in the hotel see this gun through the window that he's sticking out the window, and they call the cops, and they say there's a guy in one of the rooms in the hotel, and he's holding a rifle. Now, you can't tell from a different distance that it's a pellet rifle, so the police respond, and they've got this drunk guy, and he's on his knees, and he's got his hands up, and he's saying, please don't shoot me. And then they tell him, get down on your hands and knees and start crawling toward us slowly so that they can handcuff him, right? Now, while he's doing that, he reaches down toward his waistband. Now, the theory is that maybe as he's crawling on his hands and knees and he's drunk as a skunk, that his pants start getting pulled off by the action of crawling down the hallway. That may be what happened. But what the cop who's got a gun on him sees is a drunk suspect who had a rifle in his hands and who is now reaching for his waistband. If you're the cop, what do you want the cop to do?
You know, in both those cases, the cop never actually saw the gun.
It doesn't matter. Larry, I'm going to tell you something. It doesn't matter. If you're a... Hold on. Do you know any police officers, Larry?
Yeah.
And when you ask them, do you have to actually see the gun, or is the guy just going for his waistband enough to indicate that he's about to become a much bigger threat to you, the officer? Do you have to wait till you actually see that gun swing out toward you, which may be a tenth?
You have time to do that.
Oh, really? Because Larry, hold on. This makes me so mad. I've never been a cop, but it makes me so mad when people do this because... Do you know that if that officer waits till the gun is out and he can see it, so it's got to clear the guy's waistband, and the guy pulls it up, and the officer has a tenth of a second to identify that's a gun, and then the guy is putting holes in the police officer. You want that to happen?
No, that ain't going to happen. You got time.
You know what? I love your analysis, Larry, but I got to go. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I love it that some of the former Saturday Night Live alums like Kevin Nealon are now coming to Al Franken's defense. Neyland says that he says that Franken's behavior toward women was juvenile, but the punishment didn't fit the crime when he became, quote, a sacrificial lamb to the Democrat Party. I've known Al since 1986 when I first got to SNL. He says, and I think he was definitely an effective senator for Minnesota, a great, strong senator, and he was great in Congress. I'd ask Kevin Neyland the same question I asked the previous caller. Can you name for me one really important thing that Al Franken did? One piece of legislation that he championed? I know he was there for the votes and all, but one significant thing, at least in a decade at a job, you would have done at least one significant thing, wouldn't you? Let's go to Mike. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Yeah, it's a beautiful day in Southern Oregon. A little short war story on your cop thing. Way back in the 70s, I was police in Oregon. My sister-in-law was police in Chico, California. And my wife and I went down there for a visit. She invited me to ride along to see how they do stuff. Well, it happened there was a armed robbery at a 7-Eleven. And the suspect was a tall, skinny white guy with cornrows wearing a black trench coat and driving a 60-something Coupe de Ville.
Okay.
Well, not too long after that, we spotted a Coupe de Ville in a parking lot at another 7-Eleven. And as we're watching, a guy comes out, and he's a tall, skinny white guy with cornrows and a trench coat. Well, guess what happened to him? You know, he had six guns or eight guns or whatever screwed into his ears, and he's peeing his pants.
And no doubt.
About that time, we get the call that the police in Paradise got a guy, same description, 62 Coupe de Ville, the whole enchilada, and he was our bad guy. So things can go south really,
wow,
really fast.
Wow, so in Chico, in one small community, you managed to find two guys, both skinny white guys with cornrows, driving Coupe de Villes in two different areas?
Yeah. What are the odds, huh?
Wow. That's pretty crazy. Mike, thanks very much. What a great war story. Let's go to Puyallup and talk to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind on this Monday?
Hey, man. Well, I just barely moved to Washington about a couple of months ago. And
welcome.
I'm from California. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I'm really a Californian. We drive crazy in California. But I want to talk about the traffic here, man. It is ridiculous. And I've never seen, I don't understand it. I wasn't born in the Bay Area in California, but I can tell you this much. I lived there for a few years. And I got used to the crazy traffic here, but it seems like here in Washington, I don't know what it is, something in the water, the ocean, the trees, but people here do not know how to drive.
Well, do you think it's that people don't know how to drive, or do you think that the Democrats who design all the freeway systems make them so crowded, so jammed up, and so jacked up that people often get very frustrated when they're driving? And believe me, you've only been here a little while and you're frustrated. Imagine 20 or 30 years of that, because that's me. And that's most of the people listening to this show right now, is we are frustrated beyond all belief that we're stuck in traffic all the time because, I mean, Washington builds a few more roads than Oregon, but Oregon actually has the mayor of its biggest city just declared a week ago, there will be no new highways built while he is mayor. And Inslee's not much better.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't understand it. I think what it is just from what I've seen from being up here, especially with this black ice and the way it's going to be snowing. I haven't been here during the snow yet, but people have been telling me about how it is.
Have good tires and four-wheel drive is my advice.
I'm telling you, I think what it is just the way people, you know, with that being said, and us not having any new highways at the moment or any new routes, it's the way people merge. I don't know if a law needs to be made where people have to retest every 4 years or something, but, you know, there's old money out here. So you got senior citizens, and I understand that. You know, you got a lot of old money out here, and that's understandable. But if you don't know how to drive and you're scared to get on the road, you're getting on the highway at 30 miles per hour and everybody else in front of you is going 60, 70, and you're trying to merge, especially I got on the highway the other day, Lars.
Yeah.
And I'm behind this person, and there was an elderly lady in there, and then she was driving, and then a younger kid. and I'm getting on behind them, and the traffic's flying, and we're going down the 512 East. Traffic's flying. They're getting on the highway at 35, 40 miles per hour as she stops.
Holy cow.
To see if she can merge into the far left lane, the fast lane.
Oh, my God.
And there's a depot on the way, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, I don't understand. I understand you want to live, but I don't think the logic was clicking in here that if she doesn't step on the gas and get up there and actually merge, you know, I think that's just the problem in life today, period, is people don't want to step on the gas and get going anywhere.
I agree with you, because when I'm getting on a freeway on-ramp, I always figure it's easy to slow down. It's sometimes hard to speed up. I'd rather come on 5 miles an hour faster than the speed of traffic and have to just, you know, brush the brakes to slide in with everybody else at the given speed, rather than come on at 30 and try to get from 30 to 60 in a few seconds. And you're right about the retesting to some extent. There was a lady the other day, I got so mad at her because she's coming onto the on-ramp and I can see the hole where she ought to fit. And she just sits where she is like, well, you guys are going to move out of my way. And I literally said to my wife, I said to Tina, well, I was speaking to the lady, you know, through the window. I wasn't yelling at her, but I was looking at her going, lady, read the driver's manual. When you're coming on an on-ramp, it is your job to merge with everybody else, not everybody else's job to move out of your way. Now, we will be as polite as we can, but if we see a hole for you and you don't make for that hole, that's your problem, not ours. You've got the Lars Larson Show.